David, thank you for staying with us. I just show to you the public. We hope not to. She is the president, Valeria, and the other group of Italian Library.
Ciao.
And thank you again of giving your time to us, and it's precious for us. I can start with the first question, which is about our value, because you have convinced us that we have to do a big revolution in our context, and we will be agent of modernity, innovation. But how can you measure this impact? How can we have the awareness and also especially the evidence of this impact of us?
It's a very good question, because when you talk about libraries being in the community and facilitating knowledge, that can seem very general, very hard to measure. But actually, if you think about it, the measurements that we're used to in many libraries, circulation, collection, holdings, reference question answered, all of these measures came out of an objective, some objective which was, at the time, learning and knowledge wasn't a thing. So if we move more things, we move more knowledge. As we've gotten a better sense of how people learn and how that knowledge works, we can now get much more specific in how we evaluate it. And rather than thinking about measures that work across all libraries, what we need to do is think about measures that work specifically within your community. Are you in an academic community? Because your measures may look a lot like how you supported research. Did it lead to more publications, more research dollars? Did you preserve information? Are you in a public library? There it might be traditional literacy reading rates. It might be circulation, but it also might be number of people coming in to the library, working in makerspaces. Rather than looking at things that we can count easily, maybe we move to observation where we watch what people are doing in the space and report upon it. So the answer isn't that a new approach to librarianship requires a radical different way of evaluating it. It's just that we have to remember the way we've been evaluating ourselves is based on an outcome, and we tend to forget that outcome. Now what we're doing is we're refreshing, rethinking the outcome, and then we go back and figure out how we can measure towards it.
Oh, thank you very much. We will try to apply. This is a promise. We have also developed, we are going to develop really a blog about the book, the translation, and so everybody is invited to input and give testimonials of this impact. The second question is probably more difficult and more Italian, more difficult for you to understand. Because we are very hierarchical, but very, 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 very hierarchical. It is also difficult sometimes to find who is really the responsible. You have to go very at the top. And so, in this hierarchical organization, how can we be responsible? What is your suggestion?
The first thing that I'd like to separate out is that the Atlas that was translated speaks specifically around the role and the responsibilities of librarians. Whether they work in a library, whether they work in another setting, whether they don't work at all, what are their professional ethics and responsibilities? So part of this is, if you as a librarian have a responsibility to improve society, regardless of whether you do it through a library or your work environment, that still stands. There's nothing that says that hierarchy is always a bad thing when you're implementing change. If you get someone at the top of the hierarchy that really wants to implement and be innovative and make changes, they can move an organization very quickly. But I also think that too many times librarians have this sort of learned helplessness, we find that, you know, it's, oh, we're not important enough. Oh, we're part of an organization that won't change. Oh, that's too much work, whatever it is. But we forget, and we almost always put that into some sort of institutional barrier. Oh, my boss won't let me. My library won't let me. The book won't let me. But we have to remember that these are all people. I think all too often we forget that libraries were not given to us by God in the shape that they now have, except maybe the Vatican Library. But other than that, you know, no one said you had to put a reference desk up forward and collections in the back. People invented it. Over 3,000 years, people have been inventing the library. There's a story of a state librarian here, actually in the state of Texas, and he was sitting with the legislature. And the legislature, a congressman, was asking if the library could, for example, provide building funds to local libraries. And the librarian said, I'm sorry, sir, but we have a law that says that we're not allowed to do this. And the legislator looked at him and said, son, we make the laws. And the point being that just because the way it is now, the way it is now is because of decisions of people now and 10 years ago and 20 years ago. There's nothing that says that you can't make new decisions and new shaping. And so I think that librarians need to be very much activists, activists within their communities of what they're capable of, activists within their own libraries of what they're capable of. And then we have to get sneaky. I noticed one of the questions talked about sort of a subversive librarianship. Yeah. It really is the idea of how do you take a structure that you know is not doing what it can and change it? Well, if you can't get the people above you to listen, you have a community that uses you on a regular basis that's very important. Recruit them. Recruit the patrons, or as I say, members. Recruit people to ask for new services, new ways of doing it. Recruit those legislators that are funding it. Recruit and build a team. All too often, librarians will talk to their communities and say, what do you want? And communities can't answer that question. Because if they look at you and they say, more of what you are. But do they know what the options are? Do they know what the opportunities are? Do they know, what if we put a makerspace in? What if we put a recording studio in? What if we did this and what if we did that?
Yeah, thank you so much. The next question now is about differences. We have many differences in Italy from north and the south. Many differences between different kind of libraries, but especially many differences about librarians, levels, qualification, education. And so the question was, can we share a common library model? Or do you think that the Atlas can be good for everybody?
I think that we need to rethink the job of the librarian there as well. That if you look around and say you go to many a public library that has been built in Africa, it will look remarkably like libraries you'll find here in the United States and almost exactly like libraries you find in Scandinavia, because they're the ones who tend to go and build libraries in Africa. And the general idea is that if all libraries look and function the same, we can be more efficient, we know how to staff them, we know how to measure them. This goes way back in the United States, this goes back to the ideas of Melville Dewey when he was worried about efficiency. This was an argument that law libraries would make here in the States, that we need to be different. Our law libraries need to look like the law libraries they'll go to once they're practicing lawyers. And the idea was that people need to learn how we work. The pressure is on the people using us, not ourselves. If we turn that around and say, as a librarian, my job is to know and be able to talk to librarians in all of these different settings. But my job when I turn to my community is not to make it look the same, but to make my library look like my community. So what a library in Northern Italy and in Southern Italy and in Northern New York and in Rwanda should look radically different. They should look like their communities. Are they in an agricultural community? Are they in a city setting? Are they in a setting with lots of where young reading is important? Or are they in a setting where business development is important? Libraries should look like the communities. They should be very different. We shouldn't worry about making the North look like the South. What we should worry about are making sure that the librarians in all of those very different libraries talk to each other and have a common language. We become the root that holds libraries together, not how we shape our buildings or how we put our formations in place. And so the idea that there are lots of levels of librarians and lots of certification for librarians, it's not great, particularly in your when you're in a world that's changing a lot. But at the same time, that's where we should focus our training, not focus our efforts on making every library look exactly like every other library, because that's making the community learn us, not us learning the community.
This is the Florentine dilemma.
You come from a history of city states. This should be natural.
Yeah. Right. The next question is about the possible collision with university, because when we say we facilitate the creation of knowledge, some academics come and say, what do you do? I do. And so what can we reply to them?
This is going to be a very odd start to an answer, so stick with me for a moment. You're familiar with McDonald's, the burger chain that, you know, an American
everywhere.
Import?
So ever. Popular in Italy, but everywhere.
There's a story, actually. My grandmother was walking through Florence, and she asked, this was, you know, 30 years ago, asked someone where she could get a really good dinner, and they the Italian said, oh, you're American, the McDonald's is to the right. She was not what she was looking for. But McDonald's... McDonald's as a corporation is very interesting, because if you ask the receptionist when you first walk into their corporate headquarters what they do, they say, I make hamburgers. If you ask someone who's in the marketing team what they do, they say, I make hamburgers. If you ask the president of the corporation, he says, I make hamburgers. The idea that if you're part of a university and the university's role is to create knowledge, shouldn't everyone within that institution share in that mission of developing knowledge? Now, that's a rhetorical answer. I understand that what we're really talking about is what do we do with professors who see themselves as creators of knowledge, and frankly, in a tiered system where they sort of sit up here and librarians are down here. I think the answer is everyone needs help in doing that. So how do we create knowledge? Do we lecture? Probably not. Do we write books? Sometimes. But what we certainly do is work with students on a regular basis to make sure they're able to function in that professor's class. We can work with professors to help make their research easier, for example. We can get the intellectual, and one thing that people for a long time have never questioned about libraries is that it's our role to collect these really expensive licenses for online databases. We create knowledge by providing this sort of ready access to the scholarly communication for our professors. I don't think anyone would question that role. Can we now help you, professor, in becoming part of that, in archiving that over time, in making that available to you? As data becomes available, can we be part of that process? So I think the answer of we're all in the same business of creating knowledge, whether you work as a professor, whether you work as a librarian, whether you work as someone who does parking, as you work at the architect, as you work as the janitor, you're still about making a knowledge creation environment. So that's part of it. But then the idea is to invite in the faculty to say, what more can we do to help you do your job? Can we get you access to other people teaching in this area? Can we provide infrastructure for professors who now want to blog? And I know you go, oh, yeah, well, professors will blog and then, you know, the Armageddon will come. But it happens. And back to that idea of building a coalition of the willing, which is, as librarians, if we understand our role and we can find new faculty members, we can find, you know, adventurous faculty members who are part of that process, they then become our success stories to go to more faculty and more opportunities to work in that. So I think that it's actually great that what we're talking about is aligning our mission to the academy and not saying, well, those professors do the knowledge stuff and we do the archive stuff and the gardening people do the cutting of the lawn stuff. All of that is about helping people learn. And I'm, once again, I don't want to speak for Italy, but in the United States, in most of Europe and in Canada, that's where education is moving towards, which is demonstrate outcomes of everything you do to student outcomes.
I like your answer, and I will use with my colleagues some of them. There is a question from Elena. Probably a question from the floor. No other question. Clementine, are you? Okay. And so it seems that you are satisfied of their request. I try just to synthesize because I have not done a translation because I fear the connection fail. But now I just give me 5 minutes. I do a synthesis of the question. But in the meantime, Elena has been typing and transcribing, and I have I'm also registering your voice. And so later I will give a full translation to everybody. And so you will listen 5 minutes of Italian, sorry.
Oh, fine.
So, la prima domanda era sul valore e l'impact, e lui ha detto non guardate tutto, scegliete quello che è l'outcome più significativo e quello lo misurate. Quindi va fatta una priorità, va fatta una strategia, no? Scelto quello che può essere il nostro contributo migliore e a quel punto monitorarlo. E quindi è un metodo di ricerca e cerchiamo di valutarlo. Rispetto alla seconda domanda, che era la responsabilità. Allora, lui ha detto possiamo sempre fare qualcosa, anche nella struttura più chiusa che ci sia. E poi diceva anche delle tattiche, prima di tutto andare a cercare i membri, gli utenti, cioè convincere gli utenti della necessità di cambiare il servizio o di fare un nuovo servizio. Poi andare anche lì dal mostro e dirgli, insomma, guarda che forse sarebbe meglio che ci rinnoviamo, che facciamo qualcosa di nuovo. Ecco. E quindi poi step by step andare avanti. È stato anche molto interessante che ha avvertito, signori, non credete che avete l'alibi, perché molto spesso i bibliotecari che dicono così lo dicono perché dice è troppo lavoro, troppo da fare, tanto non ce la faccio, tanto cambia niente, però insomma ecco, questo è un po' pericoloso. Poi rispetto nord-sud delle differenze, e queste sono normali, c'è differenza anche tra Africa e America, ma c'è differenza anche tra città americane. Quindi il problema della differenza è il problema che noi abbiamo questo modello di biblioteca partecipativa focalizzata sugli utenti. Sono gli utenti che sono diversi, quindi i bisogni sono diversi. Quindi in realtà non è un modello di biblioteca, è un modello di comportamento, cominciamo dagli utenti e troviamo quello che serve agli utenti. Non è detto che quello che serve agli utenti qui, ancora, è lo stesso che serve agli utenti di Firenze, questo sicuramente. E l'ultima domanda, quella mi è piaciuta molto la sua risposta, sui professori che dicono siamo noi, nel lavoro della conoscenza, lui ha risposto: siamo tutti nel lavoro della conoscenza. Nell'università anche il bibliotecario, anche l'archivista che sta presso gli studenti e cerca di migliorare il loro apprendimento, anche siamo tutti nel lavoro della conoscenza. Quindi bisogna dire ai professori: sì, tu fai conoscenza, ma anche noi. Ho fatto l'esempio di McDonald's. Dunque McDonald's in tutto il mondo, se gli chiedi cosa fa, dice fa hamburger. Anche i professori universitari in tutto il mondo, se gli chiedi cosa fa, dicono facciamo conoscenza. Però McDonald's non lo fa da solo l'hamburger, e lo stesso anche i professori non lo fanno da solo la conoscenza. Ok. I have a little translated. You were speaking now about also change in the university, and in particular, you know, I'm always very interested in education, and believe that education for a professional should be different or changed. In your opinion, what has to be abandoned of the old program? What can instead be added?
Right now, too much of education around librarianship is facilities maintenance, that is, taking care of a building, taking care of a collection, taking care of systems within it, that in essence, what we've been doing is taking care of stuff. What we need to do is now think about how do we take care of communities? How do we take care of people? And what's interesting is a lot of our language, a lot of our, we're support democracy, we're for social good, we help scholarship. All of these outcomes that we talk about are very much around people. But then we turn around and we look at how we train them. We train folks for organizing collections. We train folks for building systems. We have them do readings in everything from philosophy and trying to figure out if there is a truth to the notion of how do you quickly answer a question from an online database. Imagine if we turned that around and we said, your main goal is to figure out how to speak to your community, how to do surveys of their needs, how to do focus groups of their needs, how to analyze statistics generated by the population. In other words, if we turned our analysis tools from the materials we've been collecting to our analysis tools of the community, we're going to get a much better sense of what they need, how we can provide it, and then how that can be evaluated in the long term. My bottom line through all of this is to remember that librarianship at its heart is not about libraries. It's about people learning. And I know that can sound very weird, that librarianship is not about libraries. Libraries are buildings, they're institutions, they're abstractions, they're very powerful. But their power comes from the fact that they are staffed, designed, executed by, thought about, loved by people and librarians. And so if we start there with the communication skills, analysis skills, social skills, then once we determine what they need, we can turn back and maybe a year or two or 10 later, create a continuous learning cycle so that librarians are constantly coming back and saying, now I need to understand about this technology aspect. Now I need to understand about this planning aspect. And instead of thinking that we're going to prepare someone at the beginning of their career for everything, we say, no, when you become a librarian, you invest in a lifetime of learning and education, because that's what we need as the engine that does the social good through buildings, through collections, through services, through reference. But it starts with the people. You say, but David, I'm in a library where I have 1,000-year-old manuscripts. That's a powerful document. And I say, that's only a powerful document if, one, you as a person make it available. Your institution as people decide to make it available, how they make it available, and letting people know it exists. And then once they examine and work with that document, knowing what they want to do with it. Was it just an inspirational experience? Is it going to lead to writing? Is it going to lead to some creation? And how can the library support that? So instead of thinking of the library as a bunch of shelves and a beautiful building and doors and policies, think of the library as your platform, your tool set for the good that you can do. And that change, when we start talking about librarians as professionals, whether they work in a library or not, that's when we can really talk about improving our communities.
You are right to remember to us. Thank you very much. You are always encouraging and also, I can say, empowering all of us, stimulating. I thank you very much. Everybody is very grateful to you. It was a pleasure to see you again. And for now, goodbye. Thank you again.
Always good seeing you, Anna Maria.
Buongiorno. Ciao.
Ciao.